Joseph, Prince of Egypt. Commentary for the June 18, 2022 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry. www.visitstillwaters.com. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth, and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now, therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God, and he has made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his household, and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Genesis 45, verses 7 and 8. Last week we discussed Joseph being sold as a slave to Potiphar, an Egyptian. This week we will look at the timelines involved with his enslavement, the captivity of the Israelites in Egypt, and the Exodus. This will be only a shortened synopsis of much more detailed material found at the website of the Associates for Biblical Research. While doing this, we must remember that the Bible is an Iron Age document attempting to relate stories from the Middle Bronze Age that occurred approximately half a millennium before the Bronze Age collapse of the 12th century BCE that destroyed several Bronze Age civilizations, leveling great cities to dust and ashes. Many written archives maintained in conjunction with the needs of powerful rulers were lost in the rubble during the Dark Ages following this collapse. Many not recovered until beginning in the 19th century in the Common Era, over 3,000 years later. The document that came to be known as Genesis was an attempt to reconstruct what had been lost in the conflagration. As a result, anachronisms occurred. For instance, several references to camels are likely Iron Age embellishments, since camels were widely used for trade in the Iron Age, but not in the Bronze Age. The writers of Genesis are not the only ones who bring anachronisms to the biblical narrative, however. When trying to fit Joseph's sojourn into Egypt into the chronological record of the pharaohs, some today have jumped at the chance to patch him in to the Hyksos period to explain how a foreigner could rise to be second only to Pharaoh in Egypt. The name Hyksos is Egyptian for foreigners, referring to rulers in Egypt who were probably Canaanite. But they did not rule over all of Egypt, ruling from Avaris only over northern Egypt. Competing Egyptian rulers reigned over the south, also called in our day the Upper Nile. The Hyksos ruled during the second intermediate period between the 12th and 13th dynasties, 1782 to 1570 before the Common Era. Also, while some may have thought that the Hyksos were the sea peoples fought against by the Egyptians during the time of the Bronze Age collapse, the chronology is off by over 400 years. If we take literally the Iron Age chronology that dates the Exodus at 480 years before King Solomon's fourth reignal year, widely accepted as 966 BCE, we end up with 1446 BCE. This places the Exodus after the Hyksos intermediate kingdom, which seems to fit with the idea that a pharaoh arose who didn't know Joseph, except for one problem. In Exodus, we are told that Jacob came to live in Egypt 430 years before the Exodus. This puts the beginning of Israel in Egypt at 1876 BCE, a century before the Hyksos came to power. Admittedly, this later date may be called into question because it is reaching beyond the gap of the Bronze Age collapse, but there is other supporting evidence. For instance, Joseph was given as a wife Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. This may simply be a literary twist of irony involving the names Potiphar, who brought about Joseph's downfall at his wife's insistence, and Potipharah, who blessed him with a wife who bore him Ephraim and Manasseh. The Egyptians of the Middle Kingdom considered On to be the chief deity, whereas the Hyksos elevated Set, the Egyptian equivalent to Baal, a Canaanite deity, to that position. It would seem, then, that to reward the second ruler in the kingdom, a Hyksos pharaoh would have been said to have given a daughter of the high priest of Set, not On. An interesting side note is that Asenath means one who belongs to Neith. Neith was the Egyptian creator goddess of everything. Another evidentiary point, the Hyksos being from Canaan would have been unconcerned about facial hair. But when Joseph was brought to Pharaoh from prison, we are told he shaved. Egyptians would have been offended about a hirsute Joseph. The Hyksos? Probably not. Yet another point, slave trading was common in the time of the Middle Kingdom, as evidenced by the Hieratic Papyrus, a picture of which accompanies this commentary. The document lists the names of 95 slaves, a third of which are non-Egyptian, and among those foreign names are several names, like names found in the Old Testament. Not only do these various facts argue for Joseph's arrival in Egypt during the Middle Kingdom, and specifically for the time of Pharaoh Sesostris III, who overcame the power of the local nobility and truly became pharaoh over all Egypt, including Nubia, which he conquered during his tenure. Apart from the chronological issues, other parts of the Genesis account have details that appear accurate. For instance, if we look at the Old Testament punishment for crimes, virtually all crimes are capital crimes that result in either death or maiming in some way. However, the Egyptian Middle Kingdom had a prison system. We don't know how the sentences were set, but the prison had an overseer, and Joseph, with his experience as Potiphar's steward, had two things that made him valuable to the overseer. The prison needed to keep accurate records, and Joseph was literate. Second, he was well acquainted with the process of caring for the physical needs of others. Thus, he was promoted to assist the overseer. Eventually released from prison by Pharaoh, he came to occupy the same position for Pharaoh he had for the prison overseer and for Potiphar, steward over all they had. Because of his honesty and faithfulness, Jacob trusted him more than his brothers, and he was given responsibilities commensurate with that trust. Then he earned the same trust of the Egyptian who had bought him to be a slave, and was given responsibility second only to Potiphar's over his household. Then, thrown in prison, he again demonstrated honesty and faithfulness so that the prison overseer placed him in charge of everything, second only to the overseer. Finally, with Pharaoh, he displayed the same traits as well as an understanding of how to prepare for the foretold drought that would devastate Egypt. Therefore, he reached the culmination that his entire life was preparing him for. He became responsible for all of Egypt, second only to Pharaoh. A household steward in that time was expected to not only manage the household, but also needed to oversee field workers. So this would have given Joseph needed experience with crop growing and storage, both valuable skills to assist Pharaoh. Was this a true story or a parable about faithfulness and duty? As we have seen, it has elements that fit chronologically and seem to harmonize with how things were done in the Middle Kingdom. It has a mythological basis when we consider the circular ascending path of responsibility that the hero takes, each time overcoming adversity and receiving ever more important responsibilities. This is the more important moral of this narrative, that honesty, faithfulness, and trust will prevail in the end. So much of what we are told by the world is that you get ahead by knocking someone else down. In the story of Joseph, that never happens. It presents us with something we don't often experience. The faithful, honest, and trustworthy employee does not get the promotion. Instead, it goes to the sycophant or the relative. Does this mean the story makes a good children's story, but nothing more? It may be problematic and appear to be more of a fairy tale because it is another happily ever after story. Like the book of Job, who despite great suffering ends up richer and better off than before. But the prophet Habakkuk knew that was not the case. He saw so much injustice. He asked God why he allowed it. Why is there no happy ending for so many? The reality is that we live in a wicked world where things do not end happily ever after. Isaiah the prophet, whom Jesus liked to quote, was sawn in two by wicked King Manasseh. John the Baptist, who faithfully heralded Christ's ministry, was beheaded by evil King Herod. Even Paul, who did more to establish the Christian church than any other apostle, was also beheaded at the command of a dissolute emperor. The moral here is not about happy endings, but about the value of honesty and faithfulness to us as their own rewards. When we fail to appreciate that, the results may load us with guilt that stays with us for the rest of our lives, robbing us of sleep and destroying our peace of mind. Joseph's brothers did not find that peace of mind. They continued to be in fear that he would treat them as they had treated him. While expressed in the story in terms of material rewards, a clear conscience and a decent night's sleep are beyond price. And that is the real lesson here. Thank you for listening to this commentary. You can find the written version of this commentary, along with the footnotes supporting the thoughts shared in the commentary, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find hundreds more commentaries and many more podcasts at that location. May God richly bless you and your family.